Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 17th of May, 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. Very nice having you with us this morning. I have to check my thesaurus of other words for bombshells. Is there another, what other words could we use for the day-to-day? Yesterday was a bombshell. Is today a bombshell, too? I think so.
How about just plain typical Trump administration?
I guess.
Another day.
Another crisis and more for us to talk about. It certainly keeps us busy, and we're ready for it. Let me introduce the panel to you. First of all, just a couple of notes. I'll introduce the panel, and then we'll have more notes. But I just want to say that we received word that Rosemary has landed safely in Sarajevo. She sent a picture of her sunning on a deck in bare feet and had a drink in her hand. So I think she's doing well. So for people who are asking if she landed safely, she did and is doing very well. Also, today is the day that Teresa Bourgeois joins us on a regular basis, and we are thrilled to have you with us. And thank you very much for being with us and coming in and taking the heat.
Well, I'm so delighted to be here. Such a quiet time in the world. So little going on.
A little to talk about. You guys are going to really struggle.
It's too bad, Teresa. There's nothing to talk about that will draw on your experience in Washington.
Yes. There we go.
So Teresa's will be with us, and I have to get this ready in my mind. But Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
Indeed,
Monday. Yeah, excellent.
And others' duties as assigned.
That's right. So that's great, and wonderful.
Delighted
communications consultant, and we're thrilled to have her with us. Okay. Also joining us, we have a full contingent from the Times Union newspaper. we're also very happy to have them with us. Mike Spain, who was supposed to be with us yesterday, had a little family crisis, a little injury. So
everyone is doing fine.
Excellent. So you're here today, and we're thrilled about that. And Chris Churchill joins us. We haven't talked to Chris in a while, and it's been very nice. I saw you in your habitat yesterday, last week when we were at the Times Union at the media center.
My dirty little desk.
Yeah, your natural habitat.
The grubby surroundings of the Times Union newsroom.
Well, you come out of this beautiful Hearst Media Center, and then you go see Chris's desk.
Oh, just for the record, my desk is fairly clean by the standards.
Oh, it's very clean.
By the standards of the newsroom.
Yes. No, it's very clean. No, yeah. I just mean it's a different. The lighting is different. Let's put it that way.
The environment is dramatically different.
Yes. Well, it's very nice to have you with us, and of course, Mike. So thank you very much. Hey, quick announcement. As you know, the lockbox is rolling, and we need to make $500,000 before June 5th. So Malcolm Nance was with us yesterday. We had a lot to talk about with Malcolm. Malcolm Nance is a counterterrorism expert, and he is a MSNBC commentator. And he seems to be, as we've all been alluding to this morning, he seems to be in high demand lately because a lot of people want to figure out, well, quite frankly, what the hell's going on. So we asked him if he would do an event for us, and he is going to do an event for us, and we are selling, we don't sell anything. That's right. Yes. No, I can't say that. Right. We have as a premium, for a lockbox, exclusive lockbox premium, for a ticket to see Malcolm Nance and the roundtable panel live at the Linda on Thursday, June 16th. And 15th, I'm sorry, June 15th. That's the 15th of June. It's a Thursday. And festivities will start at 8:30. Breakfast, if you've been to one of these events, you know breakfast is really good. And we'll have that, and then we'll have our full panel. Malcolm will be at the front and center. Of course, regular crew will be there as well. We welcome you. You can ask your questions. And as I said in one of our promos that we did for it, how much, you know, do you get quality time with a spy? Right?
I know. Well, how much do you really know when do you really know you're with a spy?
Well, that's true. Right. That's true. So
you might be with one right now.
Yeah.
You never know.
Rosemary's
gone. I'm recording all of
this. And I'm taking copious notes.
Yeah, you're taking notes.
Contemporaneous copious notes.
So WAMC.org, it's $100 a ticket. So here's the thing. We started this last night of just putting a couple promos on on the air, and we've already blown through a lot of the tickets. So if you want to go, we anticipate this to go very fast. We only have 200 seats in the place. So if you want it and you want to do it, please do it now. It's WAMC.org. When you go on the website, you'll see a picture of Malcolm, and it'll just say to pledge, and it'll walk you right through the process. You can also call the front office at 1-800-323-9262 if you have problems with that. So June 15th, Thursday, it'll be right after the fun drive, God willing, and and we'll I'm sure that we'll still have a lot to talk about. So we thank Malcolm. We thank you. He has a book out, and he'll have a book signing after the event. So
that is a terrific event.
Yeah, it'll be a really cool event. It'll be a very fun time.
Fantastic.
We'll have a lot to talk about.
Nice of him to do that.
Very much so. So we are now left to talk about what else is going on in the world. Yesterday's crisis was the president seeming to give Russia classified information. And what happened there, the bombshell in the what seems to be a great tug-of-war battle between the newspaper titans of the Washington Post and the New York Times of who's going to break the bigger story each day, the Wall Street Journal, right? So the Times, or so the
Washington Times had it first, right?
Yes, Washington Post had the Russia story first.
Right, that's correct.
And then New York Times had the story yesterday about James Comey. So Trump asked Comey for him to end the Flynn investigation, and the quote that comes out of this, which I think may be, I don't know, it's too early to tell, but it could be, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman," type line, which is, "I hope you can let this go." So that's the line that apparently is from the memo,
which might be resulting in him, you know, so I'll
that
let
was
him
merely
let
aspirational. He just hoped that. That's
yes. So now a couple of things about the memo. First of all, both the New York Times and the and CNN have reported this and have all corroborated the story. So far, no one has seen the memo. They have only talked to sources who have read the memo.
No reporters are writing about it.
Yes, the reporters have seen it?
No reporters have seen it. But right. His colleagues.
Yes, right.
Comey's former colleagues.
Have read the memo to the reporters.
Correct.
Yes. So that is the documentation that we have. So what we know, and you were alluding to this earlier, Mike and Teresa, about what we know about James Comey, going back way into his early part of his career, that when he would go into a meeting and find anything striking or potentially unusual, he will write down and log it. And do a whole memo and then sign it. He shared this particular one with other senior officials within the FBI. Okay, so it brings us to a bunch of questions. Let us start with the most obvious of those, which is this, if true, is this obstruction of justice?
I think it is obstruction of justice. Whether it's provable obstruction of justice, I don't think we're there yet. I mean, this is a memo, according to Comey. This is Comey's version of the meeting. It could very easily devolve into a he said, he said kind of situation where Trump says, "I didn't say that." Comey says he did. Who do we believe?
Now, we do also know that there are other memos. And that Jason Chaffetz now has asked for all of the communications between the president regarding the president and FBI Director James Comey. But to your point, doesn't it also, though, and I agree with you, but doesn't it also we have to add to the equation that, yes, it is his word against it's Trump's word against Comey's word, but he did fire the guy.
No, I know. I mean, things are piling up a little bit, for sure. But I still don't think we're there yet. We're starting to hear rumblings of impeachment and that kind of things. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, Susan Collins, the Republican U.S. Senator from Maine, was on the, I think, on NPR just a little while ago, and she said something important. She wants to be able to ask Comey the inflection, the context of how it was said. You know, it could have been, oh, I'd love to see this go away, or, you know, that kind of thing, just sort of expressing his own frustration. It really does have to be put in context. And I agree with Chris. I don't think by itself it's impeachment. I think there's a lot of people who would like to use it for impeachment. And when you did reference, Joe, President Bill Clinton's comments about his lies relating to the nature of his relationship with Monica Lewinsky as being the grounds for impeachment. You think if something like that has nothing to do with the government, or
our security, our safety, our freedoms,
all of those things, like the National Security Advisor and his connections to the former Soviet Union, it would seem that this would be more important. But I don't know that we're there yet. What do you think, Teresa?
Right. I think that what this moves us to is a situation where, Senator Collins alluded to this morning, that we're not there yet saying it is obstruction of justice, but it's enough information that leads us to need a special prosecutor or a special counsel, or for those who had not been focused on this to be more focused on the fact that this does. Well, for instance, Congressman Chaffetz is now asking for the materials when he had not before. There's some, very good pieces in the Post and the New York Times about this. As the Post writes, that the laws governing obstruction of justice require prosecutors to show a person, quote unquote, corruptly tried to influence a probe. And so, that's part of the standard. And the other thing I thought buried in the New York Times story on it was titled "What is Obstruction of Justice?" They note at the very end, I'll just read this: as a practical matter, the Constitution's standards for impeachment and removal of a president if he has committed quote unquote treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors close quote are met by anything that a majority of the House and 2/3 of the Senate are willing to vote for. And so that makes prognostication an exercise in vote counting, not legal analysis. I'm reading that from the Times. But I think that's also an important point, that if you're talking impeachment, it's really, do you have the votes for that? And then in terms of the Justice Department probe, which would be a legal issue, the question is, does it still continue to be done within the Justice Department, or has this reached a point where they do need an independent counsel?
Of course, Trump has hinted that he has tapes of those meetings between him and Comey. So, hinted. So those will be interesting to hear.
Which Chaffetz says has asked for and said if he doesn't get them, we'll subpoena the tapes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that the date he said was next week, the 24th, and that's the due date for this is while they're on the foreign trip, which I was very surprised about that.
Also, with that is the fact that, Comey has said, Comey's associates who are speaking to the press say that he welcomes that and says that, yeah, bring on the tapes because that is going to show me in the best light possible.
Right. The
other thing I wanted to get to in a moment before we hit a break here, too, is what do we make of the acting director, McCabe, and his assertion before he testified, you will remember, I believe, last week on Thursday, and rejected the White House's characterization of the Russia meddling probe and really came out in a passionate defense of James Comey. However, he did say that there had been no White House interference with the Bureau's work, and he said he would alert the committee if there was any change that they had, because as to that point, there had been no effort to impede our investigation to date. Wouldn't that be an impediment, number one, if this is true, number one? And number two, wouldn't McCabe be one of the people that Comey would have shared that with?
Exactly. And that does make it a bit foggier and a little less precise. Why would he say that so assertively if he had been, the memo from Comey had been shared with him? McCabe would have probably not said it so emphatically or strongly, or, there's maybe he did not interpret it the way that it's being interpreted today.
See, when I heard that, I heard it in the context of the Comey firing, that there had not been any obstruction, that as part of the Comey firing. But I may have misunderstood that, because now other people are...
Well, he's saying in the Bureau's work, which included the Russia case, McCabe's assertion, which came during a hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee, directly contradicted a White House spokesman's description of the Russian case as probably one of the smallest things that they've got going on their plate. McCabe also promised that if the White House tried to interfere in the Bureau's work, he would alert the committee.
Right. See, I heard that to mean that McCabe saying that even though they took out Comey, we're not going to stop. We're on this and we're going to stay on this. But I know that now other people, Fox News, others, are pointing to that to say, well, it contradicts what Comey said. So
let's ask the other question, though. If you are, especially what we know, given what we know about Comey and what was done with Hillary Clinton in the Hillary Clinton case, if he has something like that, why does he not? Is there his defense of not coming forward earlier is that he did not want to impede the investigation until it reached its conclusion, which makes sense to me.
He didn't want to taint it.
He didn't want to taint it. But then how does that, I don't know if that muddies the water too.
It's moving very quickly, isn't it?
Well, I think it raises this.
I mean, this is all why, well, go ahead, but this is all why firing Comey was such a stupid thing to do, because it's going to unleash all this, the floodgates of all this material that Comey knows that nobody else knows.
Right. And I think it gets back to the question of various decisions that Comey's made along the way of when to make things public and when not, because when I first read about this and heard about this memo, I thought, how could you sit on a memo like this? But then when I read further description that his colleagues are saying the reason he did is because he didn't want to impede the ongoing investigation or taint it anyway, well, you know, there is some sense to that. But then that hints that there must be more there more directly to President Trump. So it's complicated.
I will say one thing that made me wince a little bit, and we only have about a minute here before we go to a break, but the quote being, I hope you can see your way clear of letting this go to letting Flynn go, Mr. Trump told Mr. Comey, this according to the New York Times and according to the memo. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go. Mr. Trump told Mr. Comey that Mr. Flynn had done nothing wrong according to the memo. Mr. Comey did not say anything to Mr. Trump about curtailing the investigation, replying only, I agree. He is a good guy. Does that say anything of it?
That's just polite. You know, maybe he's a good guy. Open the door for me. It doesn't mean because he's a good guy that he hasn't.
But if they're investigating him and they know what they know,
I mean, that's
about
a polite thing.
I think that's just chit chat kind of thing. I don't read too much into that either.
Yeah,
I think he was trying to get.
He's just waiting for dessert
to
come.
I don't think we can crucify Trump for saying he's a good guy either. Although, you know, it does reflect a terrible, judgment, maybe supporting Flynn that late in the game.
We have to go to a break, but we should also note that he made the statement a day after he fired him.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be back with more WAMC.org. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday. We are expecting, I know that we've been talking, of course, about the James Comey mass and that the latest bombshell, which is a report from the New York Times saying that the president asked then FBI Director James Comey to drop the investigation on Mike Flynn. Let us talk about the Republican response for a moment, and which has been tepid up to this point. Jason Chaffetz did come out last night and said that he wanted the information. Speaker Ryan said last night that it's important that we have all the facts, to which I thought, okay, duh. and then he is, Speaker Ryan is expected to have a press conference in just a moment, right around, I guess, around 10 o'clock this morning. So we'll find out some news from that. But also, you hear a rumbling. I think you alluded to this, Chris. You hear a rumbling, but you have the Wall Street Journal in front of you, and it seems like the president has lost the journal, although I'm not sure he ever really had them. But
yeah. Well, their editorial today is called Loose Lips Sink Presidencies. And the headline actually could make you think, well, maybe that's about the leakers within the White House who are undoing Trump. But The editorial itself is actually about his lost credibility and you know, how he's, it's the, he'll, the end is he'll betray the hopes of his, of history. No, it's, he'll betray their hopes as his presidency sinks before his eyes. I mean, it's about him, just the weight of all this stuff and just, and how he's going under, essentially.
I think that's a really excellent point about his credibility. This is the guy that promulgated, you know, the whole birther movement,
right,
and spent millions of his own dollars as a private citizen to delegitimize, to try to delegitimize President Obama. And he continues to say that, you know, the crowds were bigger at his inauguration than everybody else in the world says. And now, just last week, he formed a commission to look into election fraud and people voting illegally. And he puts in place Pence and this guy from Kentucky, who is one of the guys who, one of the few guys that says a lot of people are voting illegally. Trump says 3 to 5 million people voted illegally, and had they not voted, he would have won the popular vote, which he lost by nearly 3 million. I mean, but these things are in the face of facts that are out there, of documentation.
The irony, though, is that whenever the White House tries to cover something up and tries to give kind of phony excuses for the firing of Comey or for this and that,
the person who sheds the light is
the president in the morning on Twitter, like,
yeah,
you know, about the meeting with the Russians.
Or Lester Holt's interview, when the White House is saying this was about his behavior during the campaign and his releasing information about Hillary Clinton. That was inappropriate, and that's why he was fired. So Lester Holt asks Trump himself. He goes, "Well, it was the Russian thing."
Kathleen Parker's column in the Post this morning says that if he wants to stay president, he has to stop telling the truth.
he's really bad at cover-ups.
Yeah.
You know, I think part of this is that President Trump doesn't know what he doesn't know, and I don't think he, in some cases, understood the. And McMaster, General McMaster, essentially said this. He didn't understand what he was doing, or could. Is it possible? Let me put it that way.
That was a pretty interesting comment when he basically said Trump doesn't know.
Right.
Doesn't know.
Yeah, he wouldn't even know that it was him.
Careful not.
That guy's dangerous.
That's
not on the talking points. We didn't let him know that.
But, you know, this gets back to, you know, he didn't have the skills, the background, the temperament to be president.
So back to my question, and let me just focus on you, Teresa, for a moment with your experience on the Hill. So if you are a Republican, John McCain came out this morning and said that this is reaching Watergate size proportions. Okay, I don't know, you know.
Size and scale, he said.
Watergate size and scale. All right. With that said, though, Lindsey Graham and John McCain have sort of been the only reliable Republicans to say anything negative about this president.
And Ben Sasse, too, is
right. And we do have Bob Corker saying that the downward spiral, but that was more of a warning. My question to you is, do you think this will ultimately change minds and that people will, that both Congress and the Senate will start to look at this and be a little more forceful in their
investigations.
I mean, I have to say, I will also add that prior to the Comey the Comey announcement by the New York Times, Nancy Pelosi, and I said this in the air yesterday, but Nancy Pelosi on CNN, I thought, was incredibly weak in calling out the president. And Paul Ryan has certainly been very weak on this. And although yesterday, who's our senator? Schumer said that he would, that history is watching. And I think made a very impassioned plea and was pretty set on it. So
I think two things move members of Congress: if the markets move and if their constituents move.
All right. Markets are down today. Does that make a difference?
So if the markets continue to go down and if their constituents turn on Trump, I think you'll see a big difference. What I think now is you see what I saw in the last 48 hours is an incremental movement. So one of the things that the Senate Republicans did not want is a special prosecutor, special investigator, because that has all sorts of implications and complications, because ultimately they still want to be able to move their agenda. So now what Susan Collins, Senator Collins, said was, yes, maybe it's time, maybe we need to do that, but first let's do this Senate investigation.
Right.
And so what that does is allows them to say, we're on the side of an independent counsel, but it pushes it down the road a bit to give them more time to see how this plays out and how the public and the markets respond. So I think that's part of it. But the other thing, and this may be a little too conspiratorial, but the thing that's really been intriguing me lately is that even though President Trump may not have understood what would happen if he fired Comey, certainly Vice President Pence and certainly Reince Priebus, they had to know the incredible implications of firing the FBI director. And so the question that I have is, did they go in and argue forcefully and lose that argument, or did they not argue forcefully? And if they didn't, is that a way, I know this sounds wildly conspiratorial, but is that a way to help move this process along a little bit to its more quick conclusion? I know it's crazy conspiracy.
No, I mean, we don't even know who he's keeping in the loop about these decisions.
Well, we know that he had close counsel on this, and that it was Pence and Priebus and Kushner and his daughter and one more.
Bannon? No,
Bannon was not included in the conversation. Well, but I think we have to be worried about what Bannon's doing.
I don't hear his name anymore.
The problem is that while everybody's focused on this, there are a whole set of policy issues that they continue unraveling, which I assume is what Bannon's working on. And plus, you have this trip coming up. This foreign policy trip is very precarious.
Is there any way that gets canceled?
It could be a disaster.
I know they probably want to change the subject at this moment in time, and that's probably part of why they're going. But man, this trip could be, if he's as inept on the road as he is in the White House, this trip could be just.
Well, you have the foreign policy community now afraid. They were hesitant before, but now outright afraid to, you know, share information with him. I listened to the BBC reports on this and others. And he's going to Saudi Arabia first, all sorts of precarious issues there, tough to thread that needle. Going to Israel, if in fact the reporting is right that they outed, you know, the Israeli-Syrian connection, how do you explain that? Then he's going to the Vatican, where the Pope has promised to speak with him frankly, which sounds like he's going to give him a little...
Sincerely.
Yeah. So he's sincerely going to scold him. And then he's going to the G7. And you know, what happens there?
Let's take a break. When we come back, I have lots of letters, and we will get to those, and we'll talk more about all of this good stuff. We welcome your letters as well. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Teresa Bourgeois, Mike Spain, Chris Churchill. Alan, by the way, is on vacation for a couple of days, so we will welcome him back next week. But we're going alone for a couple of days. People have written, say, "Hey, where's Alan?" Well, that's where Alan is. Here in spirit, indeed. So we thank you very much. We will be right back after this.
Support for WMC comes from Kern Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota, providing DOL fiduciary rule compliance training and guidance to life insurance carriers and their distribution partners. KernCompliance.com. The Spot 518, a weekly arts, entertainment, and cultural publication for the Capital Region, available online in newsstands and venues. TheSpot518.com. Capital Region Parade of Homes, featuring tours of 17 new design custom homes constructed by area builders to benefit Center for Disability Services, June 3rd and 4th, and June 10th and 11th, CapitalRegionParadeOfHomes.com. And Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for peony, clematis, iris, coleus, lilac, viburnum, vegetables, and the tools to help them grow, WardsNursery.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We are talking about, yes, that story, James Comey and the President of the United States and the New York Times reporting although CNN is reporting this as well, that President Trump asked James Comey at a meeting in February, following the day after the firing of Michael Flynn, to lay off the investigation. All right. So that's what we've been talking about. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to those. Zach says, speaking from the left, I can't make sense of the calls for impeachment. The result is President Pence, a doctrinaire conservative who is far more politically adept. I would rather continue resisting the hold of the Trump agenda, including his white supremacist tendencies, than install a far more competent opponent.
Yeah, but that, see, that argument drives me a little bit crazy, because that's ignoring all the foreign policy craziness and all the Russian stuff. And I mean, Trump is a unique danger and uniquely incompetent. You could fight somebody's ideology, but you can't fight craziness, you know, or it's much harder to fight craziness.
I mean, and also, Governor Pence had government experience for a long time. Now, you're absolutely right. We can argue about the ideology till the cows come home, but there still is, the man is an experienced. Right.
This chaos does real damage to the country at some point.
To the Constitution, to our economic security, to our national security.
When it does it to the Dow Jones average, that's when it really begins to matter.
I think that's when it will matter. But I agree with you, Chris. I think this, as much as I, you know, clearly philosophically disagree with Vice President Pence, I think in this case you have to put country before party. And I think having somebody in the White House who has the skills and the understanding of how to govern.
So why don't more Republicans find that, figure that out?
Well, what are they supposed to do?
Impeaching a president will be wrenching for the country.
Democratically elected president.
If in fact that happens.
I'm not saying impeachment, but I am saying at least show their concern instead of saying, you know, everything's fine and defending them too.
Right.
Well, let's say the leadership walked in, Paul Ryan walked in with his deputy and McConnell came in and they had a showdown, almost an intervention with the president in the Oval Office. And they said, you have to stop doing this. You're destroying the country. Would it make any difference? Trump might throw them out and have them, shackled.
Again, I don't think he has the skills and the understanding. I mean, I haven't thought this since the day he announced for president. Right. That's the thing that really troubles me, is what he's doing now is not a surprise. He is doing the same thing he did in the campaign, and he showed no lack of understanding of global issues or, being adept at foreign policy or even caring about the basic protocols and processes. And I agree with you, Chris, in terms of the danger of this. This foreign trip is dangerous, because if he says words matter in foreign policy.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that Trump could bumble us into a war, and I Pence isn't going to do that. There are problems with Pence, but he's a cautious individual.
He understands the nuances in North Korea, for instance. He understands nuances in the Middle East.
Or he'll at least listen to people who do know much more about those things than he does, which Trump doesn't seem to be willing to do.
Right. He seems to have a conscience.
Perhaps.
I'm not saying that it isn't often misguided. The
president doesn't have a conscience. I take a look at the David Brooks column that was in the New York Times yesterday that we published in the Times Union today. I mean, he really talks about how all these, smart people are trying to figure out Trump and what's the strategy. And there isn't any strategy.
He's a 7-year-old child is what he says in that column. Acting like a 7-year-old child.
The other article that I thought was fantastic was Max Boot had a piece, a Republican. And had a piece about it's time for Republicans to step up. And I recommend people go and read that.
Back to the letters. Robin says, I hope you will see your way clear to discuss Putin's ridiculing of the current political turmoil swirling around the president. Is he for real? How can his butting in not backfire? I don't know that they care, do they?
I think they love to create chaos. I think that's all what they're all about.
And isn't that what the intelligence agencies said when they said there's no doubt that there was Russian, 17 of our intelligence agencies said no doubt there's Russian interference in our election, and maybe they were intending to promote Trump, but clearly they were intending to create chaos, and that's what they have done. But Max Boot said, and other conservatives, I care about tax cuts, military spending, but I care even more about the rule of law. And the only thing that prevents our country from going the way of Venezuela, Russia, or Zimbabwe is the rule of law.
Hmm. Alan writes and says, Sally Yates said payments to Flynn made him vulnerable to Russian blackmail. What then can we say about Eric Trump saying Russians finance Trump golf courses? The Ruskies could threaten to call in loans, perhaps, asks Alan. Marty says, perhaps I missed it, but how or when does the word treason come into play? Is collusion to undermine the democratic process not treason? Taking it a step further, would not any attempt to cover up and impede that investigation be treasonous?
I think it would be treason. I think is there any doubt about that?
Well, that's the question on the table, and it's an intent question.
Well, and I think it's what you said very early on, right, about
proving it.
Yeah, proving it.
Yeah.
You have to prove intent.
But you also have to have the will to do it. And the Republicans who lead the Congress are very unwilling to do it. And I don't blame them for being unwilling to go through an impeachment. It's a terribly divisive thing that hurts the country also.
Right.
For an impeachment to happen, you really need a strong opposition party. And that obviously doesn't exist. Not only do the Democrats not have the numbers, they don't really have any – who's their leader? Who's their voice? Schumer doesn't cut it for me. They're very weak right now in a way that kind of helps keep Trump afloat.
Well, I don't know. Will it be the opposition party or will it be the Republicans ultimately?
Well, in this case,
it's going to be the Republicans because of the – this is a very unusual situation and that the Republicans control the House and the Senate. And so if there's going to be a change here, it will have to come from the Republicans.
Robert writes, would the panel please discuss the 25th Amendment as an alternative method of removal from office? It was discussed at a New York Times op-ed dated May 16th. It sounded like a much less traumatic process than impeachment and appropriate to a president who may have acted primarily out of ignorance or stupidity.
Well, the 25th Amendment was brought in after Eisenhower's heart attack. Was that it? And some concern, like in a situation where you might have a president, like when Kennedy was assassinated, he might have remained in a coma and then it would have been ambiguous who controls things. So it lets authorities decide that the president is incapable of governing, and it can just be a handful of people, right? Isn't that the way it works? And it's a little scary to have a few people making a decision like that. You hate to go that route. It won't be you need the consensus of the Congress and the people before you do something like that. It's a difficult route.
It's not going to happen with Republicans.
We were talking off the air, how much this is resonating amongst the general public. And there is still that core Trump crowd, that 35-40%, a much larger percent within the Republican Party that would go crazy at impeachment or
The 25th Amendment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I also think that I'd be interested to know how much the general public is paying attention to this to the level that, we are, into the level of detail.
Yeah, there was a really good interview on the Sunday morning edition on NPR with some traditional Trump supporters that they go back to. And they're much more tolerant of the chaos. They say, well, the guy is a businessman. He's coming into government without experience. You got to give him a little flexibility here. He's just applying common sense and it's running into the institution. And I'm okay with that. He's turning things upside down, and it needed to be turned upside down. That kind of a mentality. And there are, as you say, Chris, 36-38% are saying they're still backing the guy at this point. And that's a lot of people.
But also, if you listen to Fox News all the time and that's all you listen to, you'd have a whole different view of
Absolutely.
What's going on here.
Right.
I mean,
it's a whole different narrative and one that is blaming this on Obama placing his people in key positions so they can leak out all of this.
And I do think there's been at times so much noise about things that aren't really that important when it comes to Trump. The outrage level is just always at maximum.
Right.
So then when there are things that are legitimately legitimately a problem, like the Comey, obstruction of justice thing.
You can't get any louder.
To the general public, it all just sounds the same.
It's noise.
Just the same,
And it's something about Russia, and they're not really sure what happens. And again, I'm not saying that they're not informed. I'm just saying that people have a lot going on in their lives. They're not spending, this requires a lot of time to really think through it and understand it. And it might just be heard as noise. And think about how many times during the election we thought, well, there's no way that he can survive this, whether it was the tapes or denigrating a handicapped person or Muslims or a Gold Star person or whatever. Mm. But the other thing that's happening now is people are going back and replaying the tapes over and over again of him saying that Hillary Clinton couldn't be, if you can't be trusted with classified information, you can't be trusted in the White House. And so his own words are coming back to
haunt him. But does that work? I mean,
it doesn't seem to have worked.
There's been a hypocrisy in those statements since the beginning of the campaign, and they didn't seem to have any effect.
Almost everything Trump says, you can find a tweet from years ago saying the exact opposite. Right. I mean, it's been that way for...
He seems to be immune from that. He seems to be able to say something up to a point and then walk it back and it goes away. I mean, you know, the birther thing. You know, he ended it by saying President Obama was born in the United States, and that ended it. And why should it end it? I mean, it was an outright lie
but
for years.
In the meantime, though, while all the focus is on this, there are still things that are happening. You know, my fixation on health care. We're bumping up against deadlines now, where these insurance companies need some certainty that they don't have because they have to set their rates for next year.
And we are still under the Obamacare, essentially, and people don't know that.
We are still, except for... And you had a meeting in the White House yesterday with the budget director and the head of Health and Human Services, and there are still discussions that they're withholding payments to them, that they're slowing down payments, they're doing things...
To make it implode,
and not a lot of attention is being paid to that, and that has long-term implications. You have a whole separate issue on this voting question, and you have the head of the census... who resigned recently because he's not getting enough resources to do the census. Well, why should we care about that? Well, that's tied into voting, getting those records right. It's tied into how much, you know, distribution of funds. There's the whole set of issues. The climate, you know, issue is
well,
coming
all
up.
On the, I mean, they're really out of the public. You know, this noise that we're hearing now about Comey inappropriately, let's all that go on.
Ryan.
Without any real criticism.
But on the other hand, if you know, there's a story in this Wall Street Journal about Republicans getting really, really frustrated that they're not able to get anything done because of all this noise and all this chaos and the tweets. Every day gets consumed by a new tweet.
Right. A couple of letters real quick, and then we'll go to news. Larry says, no smoking gun yet. What is needed is Trump needs to be deposed and either disclose illegal activity or lie about it. Lisa says, an observation, remember that Trump asked the other members of the room, including the vice president, to leave the room before he spoke to Comey, this according to the New York Times report yesterday. Does that influence the idea of intent?
That's for a Senate hearing or a court?
Right.
But I mean, somebody, I heard a commentator, and it may have been Jeffrey Toobin last night on CNN, saying that it does show perhaps some savviness on the president that what he was about to do was.
That's the kind of thing you might do in business.
Yes.
You might walk a thin line, you know, so you don't step into the illegal area, but you know what you mean.
Let's take a break. We will go over to news. We have more letters, and we welcome your letters too. panel@wamc.org Teresa Bourgeois, Mike Spain, Chris Churchill, we welcome your letters. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org Also, we welcome Chris Churchill from the Times Union, a columnist for the Times Union. We also welcome Mike Spain, who is the associate director.
How do you do, Chris?
Or editor, associate editor.
You look familiar.
Times Union. It's their little work retreat. And Teresa Bourgeois is with us as well, communications consultant. And we welcome, again, your letters, panel@wamc.org. Okay, a lot of letters. We'll go try to go through these as quick as possible. Trump asked Pence and Sessions to leave the room before asking Comey if he let... Okay, we already went on that. I should have looked at that. Okay, Mary said, do we really believe that Pence had no idea what Trump was doing? Shouldn't he be held culpable for not maintaining his loyalty to the Constitution and the country rather than a corrupt Trump? This betrayal of the country goes much deeper than Trump. He has enabled since he took office and before.
I think it's a good question, and I've always wondered, you know, Flynn was fired for not telling Pence the truth, but how do we know for sure that he didn't tell Pence, that Pence didn't know? I've never understood that one. How do we know that Pence didn't know that he
really
talked to the Russians?
No,
I mean, how do we really know that?
Yeah. Well, convenient. It's very convenient.
It's convenient, but do we know?
I mean, it brings up something we were talking about during the break, and that is how long can the Republican leadership tolerate Trump, and they're still getting a lot from him. They're still trying to get their agenda through. Paul Ryan is on the TV right now having a press conference, and what's his topic?
He's talking about cutting taxes, and he's talking about shoring up the police force, and I think that that's probably
that's
a very
the subject.
It's very strategic of him to be reminding the markets that their focus is on cutting taxes. And if you look at their tax package, it's skewed heavily to the top 1% and to corporations. And that's why I think I'm not an expert in the markets, but from what I read, that's why the markets are doing so well. And I think they probably need some shoring up. And Paul, Speaker Ryan, and if I were him in his position, I'd be doing exactly what he's doing right now.
So we got this letter from Matthew who says, I love the program and listen to it most every day. I do not blame you because you are commentators, not the reporters. However, I do ask, when does this continual string of half reporting end? These are stories that you want taken seriously, yet there is little no data and detail. It just makes for entertaining conjecture. I, as a registered libertarian, am not a lover of Trump. However, barely 100 days of presidency and asking for a resignation is a joke. Keep up your great work. But I don't know that it's half reporting as much as it is.
It's
the fact
unsourced. This is not unsourced. There are sources, but they're unnamed sources, right? And believe me, as a reporter, I would love to see somebody's name attached to more of these stories. But on the other hand, I don't think they're made-up stories. I do think that they are coming from people with knowledge of what's really going on, and that's how reporting sometimes happens. He'd have to point to a specific story for me to know which the half reporting he's referring to.
But again,
to.
With the exception of this story, the president has
right.
agreed to everything.
Right, right. That's the thing. That's a really good point, because sometimes when these stories come out on Facebook and various places, there'll be fake news, fake news, fake news. And then in the morning, the president essentially confirms it all. So the reporting has generally been...
I told the Russians the classified information. What do you want? I can do that. I'm president.
What was his words? He said, I have the ultimate right, or I have the... almost like the divine right, but he didn't say that. But he said he had the right.
Well, McMaster kept on saying it was wholly appropriate. That was the term he kept using yesterday.
W-H-O-L-L-Y.
Yes. Legally, he...
Yes, right, yeah.
And I agree with the letter writer to the extent that some of this impeachment talk is a little... we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Right. I think so, yeah.
I agree also. I think that... it is a precarious situation, though. What do you do? And there's a lot of business of government to be done, and it is distracting from the business of governing. And so, what are the long-term implications when you have such a chaotic presidency that it's hard to govern? I think there was an interesting story on NPR this morning that a very small percentage of the presidential appointees are in place.
Right.
They're not in place yet. You have a president going on a foreign trip where in a situation where the State Department is barely staffed with key appointees. And so just the daily business of governing is not happening under this president.
I agree with you that it is a precarious position. However, Ralph Nader on our program about 2 weeks ago said that if you look at it from a point of view as an activist, it's us, the people, versus 535 of those who are in office, right? Is that what it would be?
Mm. Elected.
Right,
elected.
But I wouldn't say it's us versus them because they are our representatives.
Well,
I know Ralph Nader would, but I would disagree with that.
Okay, but the point being to get their attention. My issue, though, is why has this not gotten the... I mean, we keep coming back to this, but why has this not gotten the attention of more of those? Yes, they are in a precarious position, but also there seems to be... I don't care, and I guess this is what it gets down to, I wish they cared less about right and left and more about right and wrong.
But they're responding to their constituents. I do think that members of Congress...
Are they?
I think they do.
No, I think
a lot of these people are from districts where this people are not really paying that much attention or are not that upset about a lot of this.
I mean, I don't mean to make this a cheap shot, but is Faso responding to his district? Is Stefanik responding?
Well, those guys are from more mixed districts than a lot of Republicans. And we're talking about this on the...
But if they're violating the... Let's say the report is true and there is an obstruction of justice... Keeping quiet on that is
But are they? I don't know. It seems to me that there have been quite a few quite a few congressmen and senators who have spoken out about that. I don't know. I mean,
well, they say they want to know more information. They say it in a more neutral way. They say we should get all the facts. We should see these documents. This is disturbing. I'm concerned. But they haven't jumped in to pile on yet. And I think that you're right, Chris. If they do, they risk alienating the people that put them in office. Right.
They're in a great position. I mean, leaving Trump aside, you know, they have both houses of Congress. They have most of the state legislatures. They have most of the governorships. If the Republican Party is seen as overthrowing the president, they don't know how their voters are going to react to that. Their voters, I mean, they throw everything that they have right now into chaos. And I can see why for them that's, you know, them not wanting to do that.
As a political matter, if you didn't have to worry about the global security issues, Democrats could look at this and say, well, you know, this chaos is great for us because it's slowing down the agenda. So every day we're focusing on this. We're not getting stuff passed.
The guy who said now, he preferred Trump to Pence was saying.
Right. But separately, you know, the Republicans say, well, I'll tolerate the chaos because I want to be in charge. I want to get my stuff through. I want to tear apart Medicaid, which Ryan has dedicated his life to, you know, block granting Medicaid. I wanted the Supreme Court.
That's true.
However, the problem is now is that you can no longer ignore the global security issues. What happened in this last few days with this information, probably, I don't know this to be true, but when you read what all of the experts say, it probably costs some, you know, people their lives in terms of the people who provide this information. It probably makes us and other countries less safe. You know, there are incredibly precarious implications on the global security level, and I think that's where you decide, is it
all
country
that is
before
true,
party?
But there are also incredible implications for trying to take out a president, a democratically elected president, 3 months into his term.
Right. So,
I mean, what would that say to the voters who voted for him? Right? I mean, we're 3 months in. A lot of them are saying, Give him a chance.
Be
patient. He's not a politician. He needs a little more time.
But there was another interesting piece on NPR this morning, a great piece on McMaster. One of his friends was saying that, you know, he feels compelled to stay, even though this is a terrible assault on his reputation, because he feels to right the ship.
Right.
So the question is, if the Republicans are going to keep Trump there, what are they going to do to right this ship, to steady this ship?
But I think that's exactly it. I think you're right, Chris. It's only 3 months into his presidency. They are trying to figure out a way to harness Trump to let him get their agenda through without destroying the country in the process.
Keep Trump there as if they that's really a decision that they can make. The evidence is not there yet for impeachment. It may come out, but we don't. All we have now is just we don't have what they would need to impeach him. So even if they decided to go ahead with impeachment,
well, frankly,
it will be seen as a witch hunt.
I thought discussion about impeachment up till a week or a few days ago was borderline irresponsible. Certainly, you know, it was fanciful. But I think that when you fire the FBI director who's investigating you and your administration, and then if you then provide information that can put us and our allies at risk, then you do have a fundamental problem that needs to be addressed in some way. And the question is, what's the right way that's the best way for the country?
Yeah, but some of that is just incompetence. It's not a crime, right?
Right, but the impact of it is
right. But
the impact
serious.
Is dangerous. Yeah, that's the problem. What do you do?
Somehow, they have to figure out a way to control Trump and keep. I mean, you know, the McMaster's in the room, et cetera.
But we've been talking about that since last January, right? He'll turn around in the campaign. Yeah. You know, once he's nominated, he'll become a more traditional candidate. None of that has happened. Nor, from the reporting that we have seen over the last 2 weeks, indicates that everyone who comes in and says, "Well, you have to do this," then he'll either just not do it, or he'll do it and then go against it 12 hours later. So I don't know. I mean, how long, to your point, I understand the point, Chris, about being patient. But if you have a lemon of a car, I mean, and you're worried about your safety, at what point do you bring it back to the dealership?
I mean, but we also live in a democracy. And if voters choose a particular person, to toss that person out after only 3 months is is overturning the will of the voters, right?
Well, and what if they were wrong?
Well, they were wrong. I think that he never should have gotten the Republican nomination in the first place.
But you got to remember, too, that the things that are the problems that we're all facing now as a result of the situation that Trump is facing, these aren't things that people did to him. These are problems that were caused by him.
Self-inflicted.
These are all self-inflicted. Yeah. And we have not, thank goodness, had a major crisis. President Trump has not yet had to face a major crisis that's not self-inflicted. And, you know, is there a way to get the right team around him? And this notion of this week, as he's about to go on an 8-day trip to talking about how he's going to fire all of his people, I just think that is irresponsible. Well, this is an important...
I think
that fire people as you're walking out the door on an 8-day trip.
It remains to be seen, but it'll be a carefully scripted trip. And whether he goes off script is really the issue. And he has at times stayed within the script. And if his daughter is urging him and his son-in-law is urging him to stay in the script and how important it is, it may work out that he gets through it without creating some international incident. And that's putting the best possible spin on it.
That's a very low standard.
We're going to keep him on a really short leash and just give him, we'll give him a little...
If we're not at war when he gets back, it was a successful trip.
It was a success. We'll give him a Scooby snack and everything will be fine. Is that what we've come to?
But can I say about scripting, though, the one thing about these foreign trips are, and that it's important to script them and to stay with the script. That, in a way, is not denigrating Donald Trump.
Not at all.
The problem is that he needs to understand that these trips, whether it's President Obama or, Bush, either President Bush or whoever, part of the process here is that you have experts, you work with them, you develop a script, and then you stick to the script.
Stick to the script.
And that's the part that he's been having trouble with. And that's not denigrating him about, sticking to the script. That's if you're following the normal process.
He was
process.
Elected because people were tired of the script, right? So,
mm-hmm.
That's the fundamental.
Yeah, it's a fine line. I think Republicans are walking a fine line here, and it is exactly as you say. You just can't throw the guy out in 3 months. On the other hand, he's given you plenty of things to throw him out.
Let me get to some letters here. Kathy writes, Teresa just said that she wondered how many people, as opposed to the people on the panel, are paying attention. I don't know a lot of Trump supporters, but everyone I know is not only concerned, but paying close attention to all that's going on. In District 19, at latest count, there are 78 groups, many of which formed after the election to resist the Trump agenda. Michael says catchphrases like Watergate, Deep Throat, and secret White House tapes make us think immediately of the Nixon debacle. Comey memo may likewise be one of those phrases that one day marks the Trump presidency. James points out, do you really think the top law enforcement officer did not suggest that the president would be obstructing justice and likely be impeached? Holy moly, context, inflection make a big difference here. Stop prejudicial thinking. Consider the Comey motive now.
I don't get that. What?
He's saying there have been calls that, and I believe Susan Collins, right, of saying that they want to hear what the context was of the conversation between the president and James Comey. They want to hear the tone, the inflection. Mike mentioned this earlier. But
right.
It is interesting that all of a sudden Comey is this 100% reliable source that we can all trust every word that he says. Whereas
I have to say, though,
5-6 months ago, Democrats certainly didn't feel that way. And
the Democrats I've heard who have come out on this have been very clear, saying, "Look, we've had a sketchy record here with him, mm-hmm. but look, we have to." If this is true and this is information, then we obviously have to take it seriously.
But what I mean is that his memo is being taken as gospel. That's exactly the way it happened.
Well, I think there's a reason for that, because there's a history of him being a contemporaneous note taker and that being used in litigation. And so this is something that he has a long-standing history of doing. And in doing so, there have been cases in which those notes have been used in those cases.
But it's still
so
notes
this would be
on his point of view, right?
Right?
You and I might agree essentially about what we talked about, but our point of view about the tone and everything else could be entirely different.
But also we also know about Trump. We know what his operating procedure is too here, and the story that was laid out from the Times does not seem all that far fetched, does it?
No. And he says what his intent is.
Right.
Plausible.
Okay. Mary says, "Who led he who led the locker-up chants and lied to the vice president is a good guy, please. I don't know that we said that, but okay. I worked the school election last night in a red district, says Lisa. I overheard some of the conversations between Republicans and what they believe regarding Trump behavior is. This has all been built up by the media, and Hillary supporters can't accept that they lost and can't let this go.
That's a lot of what I'm hearing, too.
Yeah. It's a very different general population out there than it is here right now. I mean, there's an entirely parallel universe as far as it goes.
As there was during the election. And I encourage people who typically listen to CNN and MSNBC, listen to Fox for a little bit. And people who just listen to Fox, turn the channel and listen to CNN. And
of course, they're not listening here now.
Right. But no, who knows? But, you know, I think this is part of the problem.
I agree. Lillian writes a good letter. Says, I'm just waiting for the future Time magazine cover with Trump and "You're Fired" blazed across it. I'll admit, today feels like Christmas to me, says Lillian. Almost as unsettling as my fond look back on the Bush years. What have we come to?
So today,
yes, Teresa.
Today at 11 o'clock, President Trump is giving the commencement speech at, I think the commencement begins at 11. I'm not sure what time his speech is at the Coast Guard Academy. Yep. So I looked up also what are their values? What are their core values? And it's honor, respect, devotion to duty. So under honor, integrity is our standard. We demonstrate uncompromising ethical conduct and moral behavior in all our personal actions. We are loyal and accountable to the public trust. And I think, you know, that's...
So what are you saying?
What do you mean by that,
What are you getting at, Teresa?
Respect. We value our diverse workforce. Devotion to duty. We exist to serve.
So there's going to be some
accountability.
Contrast, perhaps.
Well, I think it's important to think about as these...
Contrast or nuance?
Well... These are the values that they must uphold. And so, and what about their commander-in-chief?
We'll let it, we'll end there for today. We'll be back tomorrow with another panel. We'll continue our program after this. My thanks to Chris Churchill, Mike Spain, Teresa Bourgeois, and of course to you and to your letters. We'll be back right after this.